Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we're focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Drive On. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and today my guest is Joe Fortuno. Joe is a veteran who has made it his mission to help fellow veterans secure the VA disability benefits that they deserve. And with a wealth of personal experience and professional expertise, Joe brings invaluable insights into navigating the challenges of mental health, transitioning back into civilian life, and accessing VA healthcare and disability benefits. And we'll get more into that in just a minute. But first, I want to welcome Joe to the show. So, Joe, glad to have you here.
Thank you, Scott. Definitely an honor to be here.
Yeah, you bet. Before we get into kind of the benefit side of things, can you tell the listeners a little bit about your experience, maybe transitioning from active duty in the regular Army that you served in and the West Virginia National Guard back into civilian life?
Yeah. So, you know, I joined, activated back in, I believe it was like May 99. So I did 8 years of active duty. And you know, during active duty time, you get that guard had a little stigma, you know, that, oh, they're just, you know, they're lazy. They don't do anything. They just sure. 1 week, 1-2 weeks a year. So I had that mentality while on active duty, but I wanted to do more after my 8 years and like going to school and stuff like that. So that's what I did. I did transition from active duty to the West Virginia National Guard so I can go to school. And yeah, it totally shocked me how great the National Guard is, their knowledge, their expertise. It's not just 1 week in a month for a lot of times. Right. Hate to say it, but yeah, it is, you know, they do that annual training and stuff, but there's times that you're gone more than just that 1 weekend. It could go 5 days, 6 days.
Sure.
But yeah, it was a good transition. You know, it gave me time to actually go to school and, you know, get into the civilian workforce as well. So it's in a sense, I was doing Army part-time instead. And, I was more more focused on the civilian side.
You know, I wonder, as you were talking, I was thinking about how a lot of times people transition from active duty and it's like a light switch. Like one day they're a soldier and then the next day they're a civilian and there's no real in between time. They're just done, you know? I wonder how much easier the transition might be for some folks, and you could probably talk to this because you've experienced it yourself, but how much easier that transition would be when they still have a little bit of the military experience, you know, when they're doing it, you know, 1 week in a month, 2 weeks a year type of thing, like the National Guard and Reserves, versus just going cold turkey straight into the civilian world. I wonder if that might be easier for some people. I don't know.
Yeah. I think it was an easier transition for me. Yeah. I still took, my leave and everything before I started doing drill days with the guard. But you still have that knowledge. You still have that mindset leaving out of the military. You know, I hear from a lot of friends that, you know, like you said, go cold turkey. And they miss it. They miss camaraderie. Yeah. They miss, you know, a lot of things that involve the military, but it's not like they want to do it full time. Sure. So the guard was, you know, it's a good way, for them to transition, do an extra couple of years because you're going to be in active reserve anyway, if you don't fill your contract. So, might as well, do the guard. It's easy transition. It's not a full time thing. And if you do want to make it full time, you know, they have those options for the guard as well.
They do. Right. That's absolutely right. I remember you were talking about how there's that stigma about the National Guard and active duty. And I remember when I was in basic training, so I was in the National Guard. That's all I did. I wasn't ever, active duty soldier, other than when we deployed, but still with the National Guard unit. But we're in basic training. So there was National Guard soldiers, there was reservists, there were active duty soldiers, all in the same basic training unit. And a couple of the guys who were going on active duty started like ragging on the guys who were going into the National Guard. It's like, dude, at this point, we've done exactly the same thing. There's no difference between you and me right now. So, give it a break. You're talking a big game, but I don't think you really know what you're talking about. So, so were there any challenges that you faced in your transition getting from active duty into the National Guard?
For me, there wasn't much. It was more so just get in touch with the recruiter. It's because they provided you certain options for what you can do in the Guard. It's not like you had to stick with that same MOS that you had while on active duty. And with the Guard, it's crazy. I've talked to so many Guard members that had so many different MOSs. So it is a different ball game when you go into the Guard, because the amount of MOS you can actually hold, is crazy.
Yeah.
They'll send you to schools.
Yeah, they will. That's one of the things I noticed, myself was, I didn't even leave basic training and I had school offers to me. Like they're like, yeah, your state, I guess, had slots available. Do you want to go? And, I was like, holy crap. Like this is all like, I'm just starting here. Like, can I at least get my bearings here and figure out what it is that I'm doing and like where I want to go with this. But yeah, you're right. There's a lot of opportunities. There's a lot of options for schools and other training, different MOSs. If you choose to, I knew guys who, after we deployed to Afghanistan as infantrymen, they moved on. They started working on helicopters and doing all sorts of different stuff, all still within the Guard. And so it was just, a matter of what opportunities were available for them. So, go ahead.
I was a combat engineer, while on active duty. And then I did separate school, all that stuff on active duty. When I joined the Guard, I had those options, whether I wanted to stick with, being a combat engineer, or I can go to a different engineer field. I even went to a 12 whiskey school, which is, construction. So there were just so many options for me. After I got to active duty, I wasn't stuck.
And it's cool too, because you can a lot of times use some of those experiences in the civilian world as well.
Right.
And, we were infantrymen, so there's not a whole big connection between infantry and civilian world, right? But we had a good number of people who were either police officers or corrections or things like that, who were in our unit, and so they were able to use some of the stuff that they learned in the Army in their civilian job. But then we also had a makeup of so many different people from so many different backgrounds. We had EMS workers, we had construction, we had a wide variety of people, even other more office type jobs like accountants and lawyers and stuff like that were in our unit. And we were able to utilize that expertise as well when we were deployed. So we had mechanics who could help diagnose a problem before the actual Army mechanics came out, on our trucks and everything. So like, that was super cool to have. And so, a lot of times, like you were saying, National Guard gets a bad rap, but we do have a lot of other expertise that we bring in, and it could be super useful when you're out in the field. So, I know a lot of folks, you had mentioned like the missing the camaraderie and things like that when you get off of active duty, if you just go cold turkey. A lot of folks deal with that type of stuff. Any struggles like that you might have dealt with, anything that you might have felt like you needed to seek some help for or anything like that?
I went through some mental health struggles due to the deployments I had with the with the rack, you know, they called it the Wild West back then, you know, 03, 04 and all that. And there was a lot of things that occurred during that time frame, and it's things that, you know, you want to forget. Mm-hmm. But, you know, having that support system with, you know, I still talk to a lot of my buddies that I deploy with. We have our own little chat groups now, and we still talk to each other. They have reunions. I haven't gone on one yet, though. But it's good that they're still, you know, keeping in touch with each other. And even without, you know, any kind of army friends that, you know, talk to, veterans still have the opportunity to, you know, get with any kind of programs that are in the community, yeah. You know, VFW, all that stuff. I had a good support system with friends. You know, a lot of veterans don't like talking about it because they feel like they're bothering, or they're taking up their time if they talk about it, and they don't want to feel like they're a burden to them. And so it's just that thought process. And eventually, without that help, you know, you do start sinking down, and it can get worse. I had to battle through that and know that there is a support system out there, multiple ones, that I could use to help me get back on track.
Yeah. And I guess it's really just, you know, figuring out what support system that's out there is the one for you. You know, is it, right. Is it going to counseling and therapy and talking to somebody about whatever it is that you're going through? Or is it, you know, having that, like you're talking about those chat groups with your buddies from Iraq, you know, just being able to, you know, just talk with them and, you know, keep that camaraderie. I think that's a huge thing, is just being able to have a group of people that you're like, yeah, these are my people, you know? And you maybe you've lost touch with those people and you don't have a group like that, but you know, there are VFW halls all over the place that you can go and join. And yeah, sure, maybe you didn't serve with those people, but I guarantee you start talking with those people, you're going to start to feel like you're at home pretty quickly, right?
Yep. Yeah. You bond through whatever whatever you went through. Either you bond through the suck that you went through, or you bond through the fun times that somebody else had, and you know, when they went. So it's veteran community has so many outreach programs, and so that's what I love about it. It's close knit.
It is, yeah. And I don't know if I've ever met any veterans who, like, once when you find out that each other are veterans, that they're just like, oh, well, the heck with this guy. I'm not going to talk to him anymore. Like, I don't want to deal with him. Like, it's a pretty, like you said, a pretty close-knit community of people. And, you know, you learn that somebody else is a veteran. It's like, yeah, maybe you're not going to be best friends instantly with a person, but you can at least, through that common shared suck experience type thing, you have some sort of connection there. And you can at least strike up a conversation, and you know, who knows where it goes from there, right? So talking about your job now in this type of stuff that you did, I kind of alluded to it in the intro. You help veterans navigate the VA system and get their disability benefits. What are some of the challenges that veterans face when they're applying for VA benefits, and what is it that you do to assist them in overcoming these obstacles?
Yeah, the VA is just pretty much, it's like the unknown. you know, you don't know, you know, what is going to happen when your claim goes through. It's almost like some veterans think it just goes, you become a number and that's it. And then, it's like being ghosted by the VA because you don't hear from them for a while. And then, you know, you're trying to figure out what's going on with it. So what we do at JMDL is we help navigate that veteran through the complexities of filing their claim, helping understand like different terminologies the VA will just throw at them. Because I'm not going to lie, I saw some, you know, there's decisions that veterans get, but they will use so much legal jargon that it will confuse the veteran. And a lot of acronyms, you know, the military is big on acronyms. But the VA is also just as big with acronyms.
Right.
And they'll use it all the time. So it's, there is a lot of things that veterans get confused by just with how the VA words things, the complexities of it, being able just to navigate going online, on trying to figure out what's going on with your claim. But my advice to veterans is, and I'm telling, I tell my friends right now, they're still in, I said, make sure you have your I Love Me folder. Make sure you get your record straight. You know, evidence is big. I mean, yeah. It's the VA uses. So medical evidence, buddy statements, stuff like that. Those are big things that definitely can help out a veteran. And, you know, that's why I'm telling my friends now that they, you know, they make sure they get everything recorded and keep everything on in your I Love Me folder.
Yeah. I like how you said that, the I Love Me folder. I kind of laughed when you said that, but that's really what it is, because you, at the end of the day, you got to take care of yourself. I mean, if you're not taking care of yourself and not getting your, you know, things documented and keeping the paperwork and everything, I know everything goes digital these days, but you know, whether it's a physical paper file or it's a digital file, whatever it is that you do with this information, keep it, make copies of it, back it up, you know, have it in a safe location, because, you know, your house burns down, all those papers go away, right? You got to have it in a place that is, you know, safe, secure. You know, if it's a paper file, have it in a, you know, one of those fireproof, you know, safe kind of things, or, you know, something to make sure that you have that, because, without it, down the line, something comes up that you decide to apply for those disability benefits, you're going to be out of luck if you don't have that paperwork, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's just the fact that the VA uses that, you know, if you don't have that evidence, it's almost like, what do they have to work with?
Yeah.
And so, you know, with the VA, I think it used to be like within 5 years after your last active duty date, they would, you know, they allow you to get that VA healthcare without having to pay that copay or anything. Mm-hmm. Now they extended it to 10 years. And I'm telling my friends that now also, like, you know, you have up 10 years from your last active duty day, get that treatment and get that diagnosis. You know, every year that you wait, it gets harder, just because you have to try to link it to your time in service.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And in some cases there may be things that happen after the service that they may say, well, you know, you fell off a ladder, and so that's why your back's all jacked up and stuff. Like, that type of thing could happen too. So the more time that goes by, the more opportunities that something else might happen that they can use to say, well, this is the reason why, and it's not because of your service, right? So you know, put in those claims early. And you know, hopefully that works out for you, but unfortunately sometimes things don't start bothering you until years down the line, and so you may end up waiting that long just because, you know, when you first got out, maybe that injury that you had wasn't really that bad, but it starts getting worse over time, and you may put in for disability because it really was connected to your service, but you know, just didn't really start causing problems until years down the line. How do you work with people in those kind of situations, and how do you help them kind of navigate those situations where it has been a significant amount of time between their service and when the issues start rearing their heads?
So with a lot of those things, like if they don't get a medical diagnosis or any treatments for so many years after, and there's nothing that's already service connected to, you know, latch onto it and say, oh, it could be secondary to this. We would try to tell, you know, a lot of veterans, at the firm is, you know, make sure you, try to see if you can get some buddy statements. Was there anyone witness to this event, that they can write something every year, every half? You know, I've had to write buddy statements for quite a few friends of mine that, you know, just didn't get treated after they left, you know, after they got an active duty. So it's, you know, if I was a witness to it, I'll write it. I will tell exactly what I saw. And those are really helpful. They're great impact statements. You're a witness thing.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, those buddy statements are, you know, they're not exactly medical evidence. You know, it's not as good as that because, you know, seeing a doctor who, you know, puts that in your medical file and you have that documentation, like, on X date, this is what happened and this is a diagnosis and blah, 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 all that kind of stuff. But it's the next best thing, right? You know, maybe something at the time, maybe you couldn't go see a doctor. You know, you're out on a mission and you're in combat. Like, you're not going to go, oh, time out. Let's go, you know, let's go take me to the doctor. You know, it's just not going to happen, you know, in some cases.
Quite so often, you know, it just, a lot of veterans don't want to get that treatment after they get out. You know, when a lot of those post helpers assessments, you know, they just, like, you know, they pencil whip and it's like, no, I'm good here. Yeah. Just because they don't want to wait any longer after they come back home. So it's, you know, sometimes we suggest, you know, getting a medical provider that, you know, that knows you, knows the treatments that you've done. If you have had some treatments afterwards, they could possibly write a medical opinion for you. Mm-hmm. Even the firm offers independent medical examiners or contracted through our office that could possibly write one for you, depending on the medical evidence they have to work with, you know?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. So that's the thing too, is it doesn't necessarily have to be a, you know, an army medic or a you know, army doctor, or, you know, someone connected to the military who provides a diagnosis for these things. You can get that from, you know, any medical professional, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And there's like, we have a book, that talks about, veterans disability. It has, there's a lot of frequently asked questions on there. We send those out to the clients as well. You know, that way they can, you know, take a look at it. A lot of the questions they may ask is actually in the book. You know, frequently asked questions like, what is an appeal? How do I appeal things? And it's in that book that we have. So, you know, if the client wants to, we'll send it and then we're also sending it to, you know, the new case managers so that they're aware of a lot of the frequently asked questions. We even have a VA disability calculator. If you're just wondering, what do I need to do to get to that percentage? Like, what would the percentage pay? Or, you know, what is it? What if claim a back condition and a knee condition? So on PiperVets.com, we have a VA disability calculator that can also use, like, if I got 20% for this, 50% for sleep apnea, where would my percentage be? And they can kind of, like, you know, it's like having a goal, you know, like, I want to get to this, be able to take care of my family. If I can get to this part, I know where I need to go now because, you know, the firm's navigated or somebody's navigating me through the process. I know the score I want to try to get to. This is what I need. This is the evidence I need to get to that.
Sure. Now, you were talking about, like, you know, having that goal and trying to figure out, like, how do I get to that certain percentage? You know, I need that, you know, 70% or 50, whatever the number is, you know, that their goal is that they're trying to get to. Is there any resources available that veterans can use to assess their eligibility and kind of understand what benefits are available to them based on the severity of the conditions that they're having?
Well, they can, you know, we can actually do free consultations at the office as well. They just got to call, you know, our main office will do a free consultation to determine whether or not they are going to be eligible based upon what they're just saying. You know, it's not like you have to submit evidence right then and there, but we kind of coach them, like, okay, this is what we're going to need from you to get you to where you want to be. Sure. They can easily go online and go to fightforvets.com and, you know, just ask questions on there. There's a 24-hour chat. Somebody will be there to speak with them, and that way we can give them a phone call. Just do a free consultation. No cost. We'll ask them, hey, what do you need? What do you have? And, you know, we'll guide you through what, you know, what we can now actually help you with.
Great. For anyone who's out there who, you know, they got this condition, it's been bugging them and they know it's connected to their service. Maybe they have it documented and, They know that they went and saw the doctor, you know, when they were in service, it's all squared away, or maybe it's not. And they know that they have some buddies that they can get to write a buddy statement.
Yeah.
What's a good first step that they can take to getting those benefits or applying for the benefits, I should say?
Yeah. You know, va.gov, is, you know, has a bunch of tools that, you know, that a lot of veterans can go onto, for, you know, submitting a claim. We can also submit claims for you, but gathering that evidence, like I said, it's very important. Cause you need something to work with, whether you go through our office or go through va.gov, they're going to want that evidence. How is it related to service? You know, and it's, you get denials all the time. A lot of veterans can get denials. You'll see it on there. We can't find a link to your time in service. There is a diagnosis. We see it, but there's nothing showing how this diagnosis links back to that injury that happened. You know, and that's where you want to talk about how it's worsened since your service, and you want to make sure you can write your own statement support claims and submit that. Like, how is it related to service? This is how. This is what happened. Here's the medical diagnosis. Here's my treatments that I've had. Here's even a buddy statement with that.
Yeah. I think that's a good first step. I think, you know, collecting evidence, getting all that stuff together is definitely huge, like you said. And some of it may take some time and effort to compile all of that information. The VA does do some legwork to help you out with gathering evidence, but it's always better if you have it up front and just submit it so they don't have to. You know, especially, more recently, they're pretty overwhelmed with a lot of claims, so they may miss something, you know. So it's not a commentary on, you know, their work ethic or anything like that. It's just, there's a lot to go through. So the easier you can make it for them, I think the better it is. What about when folks get those denial letters and they come back, like you said, there's a lot of times there's legal jargon, there's acronyms, there's things that it's just confusing sometimes. What's a good first step when they get that denial? They know that this thing is service connected. They didn't obviously do a good enough job proving it to the VA. What's the next step that they could do to kind of get that decision reversed?
So they definitely have to read that rating decision. That it'll state exactly the reasons for denial. It'll even state on there what was considered favorable. What did they find that was favorable? Either a diagnosis or they did see that you served in that time period. So that's, it kind of gives you something to work with.
Sure.
Definitely, you know, with a lot of these appeals, you have that 1 year window. Either you want to appeal it and get it sent up to the Board of Veterans Appeals, or you want to do a higher level review. You can even submit a supplemental with that new relevant evidence of support why you believe it is related to service. So there's different ways, but you definitely need to read that decision letter. That's going to give you the clues that you need to see what you need to help you get a service connected in the future.
Yeah, that was one thing that that I was told a while back, is that if you do get the denial letter, read through it, and it's going to tell you pros and cons, the things that are in support of your claim, the things that are, you know, in your favor, but it's also going to tell you all the things that are the reasons that they denied the claim. And so then it's almost like a fill in the blank, the way I think of it is, it's like they give you the answer, almost like Jeopardy. Like they give you like the opposite, like this is what's wrong, give me the answer, and you just got to fill in that blank. And you know, maybe it's something like you need that buddy statement to tie it to your service, because you know, it's like, okay, you have the medical diagnosis that, you know, your back or your knees or your hips or whatever are all messed up, But that diagnosis happened after your service. So now we need something to tie it to your service.
Yeah.
You know, what is that thing? And in some cases, this is before you get that denial, but in some cases, some conditions are, you kind of get the benefit of the doubt. They have what's called a presumptive condition, right?
Right, right.
That could be in your favor too, because then you don't need to go through all the hoops of proving that it's connected to your service. They just kind of assume that it is, right? Yeah. So, are there any other resources or any other things that you might want to share with the audience that might be useful when it comes to applying for VA benefits or appealing or, you know, filing a supplemental claim or anything like that, or providing supplemental evidence, I should say, for a claim? Any other resources that are available or any other tips or advice that you might want to offer?
So, you know, what the veteran has access to is called their C file. Other term for it is called the claims file. So it contains everything from the date that you raise your right hand to everything that the VA is tracking currently, including private records or, you know, VA records. Anything that you've done and submitted to the VA or even to the military is going to be in the C file. So a veteran can request that, you know, our office also requests that, because what we do, we go through each and every page line by line just to see if there's anything in there that we can latch on to. Because sometimes it is hard to find that one little tidbit. Because, you know, with the VA, sometimes they say, oh, well, we don't see that you actually served in that region, and we'll dig. You know, we'll dig to find if they were in that area. We'll look through their clothing records if we need to, just to see if there was something in there that shows, like, here's a unit that he was in this time frame. This unit is only in, it was only in Iraq at this time frame, and this goes for that time that he was in. So we look for little things like that. C-file is great, because it contains everything.
And where can you go to get the C file if people are interested in finding
you that? You can request it through the VA. Okay. That's what we do. We request it through the Freedom of Information Act, and to get a copy of that. So it ranges between 300 and, you know, 15,000 pages, but the veteran can request that under the Freedom of Information Act, because it is their own personal record.
Sure. Sure. That's actually good information. I didn't know that file even existed. So I guess for folks who are interested, go research that and see if that might have the information that you need to get that claim successfully submitted and approved, because we don't all hang on to military records forever after our military service. Sometimes we do, sometimes we don't, but if that file exists and it has just that one little piece of evidence, even something like a clothing record, like you said, that could be what you need just to tie, yes, I was in this location on this date or this time period anyways. And that might be, you know, something that you might need for that type of evidence. So, any little sliver of evidence that you can grab out of there. And like you said, that could be quite extensive as far as the paperwork goes. So that is a good thing.
The VA can miss some things that are on the seatbelt, because they dig through it, but it can be missed. So it's if you want to get a copy of it, because the VA may have missed something that you know that's in there. Mm-hmm. We've had clients ask us, we can send them a copy of their seatbelt, because when we request it, at times they'll send it to the client, but most often they'll send it to us. And that's what we do. We look through each and every page. And the client will want to get a copy of it also, because he wants to do the digging himself as well.
Sure.
You know, so there's a lot of information in there, especially, they can go all the way up to 15,000 pages. That includes, the doctor's notes that are scribbly and stuff like that. And those things are definitely looked at. Better can look at it, and the VA could miss it. Mm-hmm. It was human. It can be missed.
That's right. Yeah, that's true. It is You know, like any other human, they're imperfect and they could miss things. So, again, like I said before, you got to fight for yourself. If you want this, that's something you're going to have to put the time and effort into to make sure you get it. Because other people aren't going to be, they're not going to have the same vested interest as you do. And, you know, it's ultimately your bank account that's going to be impacted, not theirs. So, you know, getting those benefits is only going to benefit you, you know, and your family. So, you know, you're going to have to get put some work in, to find some of this stuff sometimes. You know, other times it may be, you know, readily available and it may not be all that difficult to do, but sometimes you might need to do a little investigating, a little digging to get that stuff. So, awesome.
It's daunting. And that's why, you know, we offer that for the veterans. That's what we look through ourselves, and then it gets looked at over again. But by the operations manager, everything gets looked at once, twice over, just because we don't want to miss it. It's part of what we call like client-centered focus. We're there because we want to make sure that the veteran gets the most of what he can get. If we miss something, you know, that's on us, because we want to make sure that we give that percentage back to that veteran. Like,
sure,
based on that contract, to serve in the service, you know, that 1%. That's why I say, you know, the 1% to serve, you want to make sure that we give 100% back.
That's awesome. For the folks who are interested in maybe getting some assistance with their disability benefits and filing their claims and all that type of stuff, where can they go to get in touch with you guys and your organization? And, you know, where is it that, well, first off, where are you located, and where do you help clients from? You know, are they location specific, or are you nationwide?
We are definitely we're nationwide, but we do have a free consultation. They can always see if we're able to assist in that area.
Okay.
They can go into the JANDOS website or the fightforvet.com, or they can just call us toll free, 877-715-9037. That will get them to someone that can do a free consultation for them. A lot of veterans, what they do is they go in the chat and they just submit their question so that they can be called later on and to see if they're able to assist. Because we have clients nationwide. We have clients in Hawaii, Alaska, you know, everywhere. So, excellent.
Well, excellent. Yeah. And I know there's some people out there who are, you know, dealing with disability benefits and just banging their head against the wall, trying to figure it out and get through it all. But, so I will have those links that you mentioned, for both of those websites. I'll put the phone number in the, show notes so folks can find that rather easily. As you're listening to the episode, you should be able to find it right there. Again, if you guys are having issues with your benefits, or you just don't know where to start, you're feeling overwhelmed, because it can be overwhelming, you know, reach out to somebody. There are people out there who can help, just like Joe and his team. And, you know, the folks who are out there, they, like Joe said, he wants to get you 100% of what you deserve. So, you know, don't just sit there, because, you know, that money is yours. It's just a matter of proving that it's yours. Right. So that's great. Before we wrap this episode up, I always like to end episodes with a little bit of humor, and especially when I have another veteran on the show, having a little bit of humor where we can poke fun at other service members, I think it's always a good time, and usually puts a smile on people's faces when I say the name of the segment, which is it service connected? That's the name of the segment, and it's you know, we just watch service members doing something stupid on a silly video, and then we get to laugh about it, and they'll probably use this as evidence in their disability, application later on. So I'm going to share my screen real quick here, and we'll take a quick look. So right now, for the audio only listeners, I'm going to try to explain this as best as I can, but check it out on YouTube or X, Twitter, check it out. So right now it looks like we got a couple soldiers standing at the back of a vehicle that the ramp is open. And that's all I can really see right now. So I'm just going to play the video and see what happens. So we got a couple of, okay, we got one with like a baseball bat and we got a couple guys running out of the vehicle, followed by a raccoon. Man, guys, stop messing with the wildlife. They give you these briefings for a reason. They tell you, stop, don't mess with the wildlife. And you got it inside the vehicle with you. And there's like three guys in there that it's not going to be happy. You're definitely going to get like scratched or bit or whatever raccoons do. I don't know. You're getting messed up, put it that way. I don't know. Would that, if they got all torn up, they got like rabies or something from a raccoon. Got to imagine that. I don't know where that would fall under like the disability benefits, but they'd probably have some case there, I would imagine.
Oh, yeah. Right? I could see something being traumatized, or, you know, if they got bit, that could be a skin condition that could develop in the future. You never know. Yeah. Definitely get it recorded if you got bit, monster, so I'm not trash bandit. Because those look like a striker to me, but we always keep a bunch of snacks in there, especially on long missions. But I can see why there would be something in there probably rummaging through.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. I actually jumped to the conclusion that they were messing with the wildlife, but the wildlife may have been messing with them and coming after their snacks and
whatever they may have had.
Oh yeah,
there's pokey bait in there.
A ton of it. Yeah, they probably had it. They probably took all the ammo out of the ammo cans and shoved pokey bait in there instead. So anyways, Joe, thank you again for taking the time to come on the show, sharing what you guys do, and also for the work that you do in helping veterans get the disability benefits that they deserve. So thanks.
Thank you again for having me. It was a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On podcast. If you want to support the show, please check out Scott's book, Surviving Son, on Amazon. All of the sales from that book go directly back into this podcast and work to help veterans in need. You can also follow the Drive On podcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and wherever you listen to podcasts.